Our next case for argument this morning is Nycomed U.S. against Abbott Laboratories. Mr. DeGrand.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. In this breach of contract case, liability has been admitted, as has the fact that because of the breach of contract committed by Abbott Laboratories, my client, Altana Incorporated,
I thought Altana is no longer your client. I thought it's Nycomed.
It's been renamed as Nycomed.
So why don't we use the party's actual names? Lawsuits have to be pursued in the name of the real party in interest.
Happy to do that, Judge. My client, Nycomed, was required to destroy 1.2 million tubes of finished product in its inventory. The product at issue is erythromycin ophthalmic ointment, a product that is used to prevent infection in the eye. FDA regulations require that the ointment be manufactured in a completely sterile environment using sterile ingredients.
Now, Mr. DeGrand, let me jump ahead of this a little bit, because it seems to me, since Abbott has already paid Nycomed $488,000-some-odd, representing the direct costs of the materials to make the destroyed ointment, representing the costs of the destruction process, representing overtime, you know, extra labor costs that were necessary. And your argument, as I understand it, is that if this problem had not arisen, you not only would have sold the 1.2 million tubes that you had to destroy, but you also would have sold the replacement 1.2 million. So it's essentially a market expansion kind of claim. We see these in other kinds of cases, antitrust case, where somebody says, oh, you know, were it not for the defendant's bad acts, I would have somehow expanded my business. I would have sold to this new customer. I would have sold in this different part of the country. What is lacking in this record, to me, is any evidence that you would have sold a single additional tube beyond the 1.2 million that were sold. I don't see evidence of your turning away customers. I don't see evidence of requests coming in that you had to think about, you know, how can we do this? And so where is that evidence?
Judge, this product is made by my client every 3 weeks. And
that's fine, but there's an amount. I mean, every market has a certain amount of demand and a certain amount of supply, and either you're going to take sales away from somebody else who's making this ointment every 3 weeks or however often they sell it, they manufacture it, or some new use for it will be out there, so demand will increase. I just don't see how this record supports that you would have sold both the 1.2 million that were destroyed and the replacement 1.2 million. And without that, it looks to me like Abbott has reimbursed you.
Well, here's how. First of all, Abbott has reimbursed us for the direct cost of making the product. But what Abbott has not reimbursed us for is the 95-day investment of time, labor, and resources invested to make that product. And the law provides that we're entitled to a return on that investment of time, labor, and resources.
I don't think you were making that argument. I mean, in order to be put in as good a position as you were in, were it not for this tainted erythromycin, you needed to be reimbursed for the things they reimbursed you for, the destroyed product, the cost of the destruction, the overtime, et cetera. You sold the new 1.2 million.
But we would have sold that anyway, Judge, because the record shows that even in the months of 2003.
But you wouldn't have sold 2.4 million.
Sure we would have, Judge. In the months of
Where's evidence in the record of that?
In the months of 2003, following the recall from May to December, Nycomed sold 4 million tubes of this ointment.
But I don't understand what the significance is. The district court found, as a matter of fact, that Nycomed never turned away any order.
And we stipulated to that.
That Nycomed sold exactly as many tubes as it would have sold had the original batch been in good shape.
I disagree, Judge, because the reason...
Look. Trying to talk over a judge is not a good strategy. This is a bench trial. There are findings of fact. Right? You made a pitch to the trier of fact. The other side made a pitch. There's a finding of fact that's adverse to you. You may disagree with the finding of fact. I understand that. But you have to show it's clearly erroneous. That is, that no sensible person could have reached the conclusion the district judge did. And the arguments you're making here are just, well, these were the arguments we made in the district court. We're making them again. But they don't respond to the burden you face. That's what I'm trying to get you to confront.
Okay. If I spoke over, Your Honor, I apologize. The first point I would make in response is that this was a ruling on summary judgment. It was not a bench trial. So the case is before the court on de novo review. Secondly, the reason why we were able to continue to meet customer orders in the period following the breach and recall is because Nycomed continued to manufacture this product. Only by allowing our future sales, the company's future sales, to displace what was lost as a result of the breach and recall, is Abbott able to argue that we would not have sold that product in addition to what we did sell. And that deprives us of the profit on one sale of the ointment.
I don't see where the evidence is that a single future sale was compromised. I think if you are saying the product that we would have been selling in September had to be diverted to June because we were busily making replacement or something, I just think you have to have some evidence that people wanted to buy more of this product than you could supply.
And I think that the law doesn't require that. I think what the law says is that if we show that we could have sold the 1.2 million tubes of destroyed ointment, this product was destroyed. We were unable to sell it.
I understand that, and you made replacements.
Right. But the reason we were able to sell the replacement and the product that followed was because Nycomed is in the continuous process of manufacturing this product.
But the bottom line is there was no customer that ordered this cream that you couldn't fulfill the order. In fact, there was product left, right? You admitted that there was product left.
Well,
and no one ordered it.
Well, we are continuing to make this product and sell it today.
Right, but what I'm saying is it's just your argument is very circular. The bottom line is you had plenty inventory to fulfill any order. Nobody asked for it, and you couldn't fulfill it. It was there in the inventory. There was excess there. And so as much as you think the law is, and I've read your brief, I understand what your position is, I think you're just off base on what you can be compensated for under this scenario.
I think that under Diasonics and the other case law, the company is entitled to be reimbursed for the investment of time, labor, and resources, the 95 days it spent.
That's a completely different point from the loss volume point, and it bypasses the fact that your client has already been reimbursed $488,000 for that expense.
But that's only the direct cost, Judge. That still doesn't compensate my client for the compensable item of damage, which is the return on its investment over 95 days.
And did you break down the amount of the increase in the overhead expenses? You didn't break that down for the district court, did you, specific dollar figures?
We did not, Judge. We do not believe that the law requires that under the audit trail decision.
So, well, that's a problem, too, in my mind, having a breakdown of, so we don't even know what we're talking about or you're talking about in terms of the overhead expense and what the excess was, increase.
I think Autotrol already addresses that and provides that even fixed inventory, that which did not go up because of production levels, is nonetheless a compensable item of damage because the breach leaves the company without the ability to recover that investment. After all, Nycomed kept the business open and was running the business and incurring these expenses over the period of 95 days it spent to make this destroyed product. It could not recoup those costs because of the breach, because it had to destroy the product. There's no way on this record that my client has been reimbursed or compensated for the investment of time, labor, and resources spent making this product over 95 days.
Well, but it
or
got,
its overhead
it got
resources.
Free materials, free labor, and free coverage of overhead through the profit of selling the second batch. You wouldn't have had somebody deliver all of that material to you for free if it really was just additional production.
But it's entitled to its separate return on that investment of time.
That wasn't
labor.
Its investment. You got compensated for the overtime, for that.
Right, and that enabled us to mitigate the future harm that would have occurred as a result of this breach. But it did not address the loss from the destruction of this product, which we could not sell.
That's where you lose me. You're treating the $488,000 as if it were your investment. Actually, it's Abbott's investment. You don't get a profit on Abbott's investment.
I disagree. I don't know what Your Honor means by that. I mean, the $488,000 represents costs incurred by my client to make this product.
Suppose your client was a retail grocer and it had ordered a truckload of peas, and the truck overturns on the highway and all the peas are spilled. So the seller dispatches a new truck with new peas, right? Pays for the peas itself, delivers them to your grocer. You don't get a profit on the overturned truck of peas.
I agree with that, Judge.
The seller's loss. Well, this is effectively the same case.
That I disagree with. And the reason is because I committed an investment of my time. My client committed an additional investment of time, labor, and resources to make this product, which it had to destroy.
Thank you, Mr. DeGrand.
Thank you, Judge.
Mr. Nagorski.
May it please the court. Abbott asked that this court affirm the district court's summary judgment ruling and rulings in Abbott's favor because Nycomed failed to produce any evidence that Abbott's breach caused it the loss of sales, revenue, or profits. Instead, Abbott's payment of $488,000 fully compensates Altana for the overmanufacture of product that was caused by the breach and restores it to the position it would have been in had there been no breach. Any additional compensation, whether of lost profits or the allocated overhead, would put Altana in a better position.
There is no such thing as Altana. I wish you would use its real name.
Okay. I apologize, Your Honor. I will try to do so. Briefly on the issue of lost profits, Nycomed's burden in this case was to point to evidence sufficient to prove its lost profits to a reasonable certainty. However, Altana failed to produce evidence of even a single lost sale. It cannot identify to whom, when, or at what price. Instead, it generated as many orders as possible, filled those orders, and had product left over. In addition, Altana mitigated its damage through the manufacture of replacement product.
It's obviously very hard to rewire a brain on the fly. The name of the entity is Nycomed.
Sure. In any event, Nycomed generated as many orders as possible, filled all orders to meet customer demand, and had sufficient inventory to meet additional demand. The only reasonable inference from those facts is that Nycomed sold all of the ointment it could sell, notwithstanding the breach. They also admitted that they made replacement product and sold that in place of the destroyed product, thereby mitigating its lost profits.
Is there any evidence that Nycomed had to use any resources for making the replacement product that it might have devoted to some other product?
The evidence, actually, and I would direct the court to pages 40 to 43 of the Rule 30b-6 deposition of Mr. Dulick, which is in the record as part of the summary judgment exhibits, is that Altana worked overtime and also for a time did divert resources.
Right, so they pulled people from some other lines.
Right, and then as Mr. Dulick went on to say, and as Altana also said in its interrogatory responses, they then worked other overtime, which was included in what they were paid for, to get those other products back on track.
So they get paid for that other product overtime.
Yes, they did. That was included in the calculation, which I believe is also included. It's Exhibit 6A. It shows that they worked over 2,400 hours of overtime, which is part of their compensation in this case. And that included not only the replacement ointment, but also getting back on track with their other products.
So in effect, you compensated them for the opportunity costs they had to devote to replacing this product.
Right. That is correct. And, in fact, I mean, Altana admitted that they would not have worked any of that overtime but for the breach. So the idea they advance now that they would have somehow done something else during that overtime just doesn't create a genuine issue of fact. Turning to the
when you say Nycomed admitted this, in what form did they do so? Was it the deposition of or an admission or what form? A stipulation?
That they admitted that they got back on track with the other products?
That they wouldn't have made any more. Didn't you say that they admitted they?
Oh, no, they admitted that they would not have worked the overtime work.
They wouldn't have worked, right, that's right. They wouldn't
yes,
have
that is correct. That's
engaged in this all-out effort to produce extra product.
Right, that's in interrogatory answers that were prepared by their attorneys, signed by Mr. Dulick, and at Mr. Dulick's deposition. In fact, I don't think they even dispute that on appeal. Briefly turning to the issue of overhead, Altana, the court correctly observed that Altana did not present any evidence of an increase in overhead and instead relies on a series of cases that allow for the recovery of overhead in the event there is a loss of revenue. However, for the same reasons we've discussed with respect to lost profits, there was no loss of revenue here. Instead, Altana makes a couple arguments that are flawed. The first is that it could not recoup the overhead expenses allocated to the destroyed product because the product had already been manufactured. However, the timing is not dispositive in this case because Altana was able to and did recoup those expenses through the manufacture of the replacement product, which was manufactured by means of the overtime for which it has been compensated as opposed to an increase in overhead costs, of which there is no evidence. And again, going back to Your Honor's question, there was there is the claim that they could have used that overtime profitably for some other use. However, their testimony is they would not have worked it at all, and in fact they've been paid damages based on that testimony. So for these reasons and those stated in Abbott's brief, this court should affirm the district court's granting of Abbott's summary judgment motions and its denial of Altana's corresponding motions.
Thank you very much. Your time has expired, Mr. DeGrand, but I have one question, not one you can answer here, I assume. I've been worried about who the plaintiff is. I just looked up Nycomed's website, and it has information different from that in your statement of interest. The statement of interest attached to your brief says, identify all parent corporations, if any, and you give Nycomed Asset Management GmbH. The website says that the parents are Nordic Capital and CSFB Alternative Capital. So I think we need a new corporate statement of interest specifying the structure of the plaintiff on the day the suit was filed and the structure of the plaintiff and any 10% owners now. We need to track down both the existence of jurisdiction and whether there are any disqualification problems here.
I will submit that, Judge.
Thank you very much, Counsel. The case is taken under advisement.
Thank you very much.